from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Mina Kim. Coming up on Forum, remember the monkey that took a selfie and the debate over whether the owner of the camera could claim the rights to the image? Well, there's a new twist. PETA is suing in San Francisco to give the monkey the rights to the image. Then at 10:30, Stanford linguistics professor Dan Jurafsky joins us to talk about how ketchup got its name and why it's called an entree when we eat it in the middle of the meal. It's our Friday edition of Forum after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Mina Kim. You might be familiar with the crested black macaque with a toothy grin who took a photographer's camera and snapped a selfie. The so-called monkey selfie sparked a debate last year when the photographer who owned the camera claimed the rights to the image but was rebuffed in the U.S. because he didn't actually take the photo. Now PETA, or the People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, is stepping in saying the monkey owns the rights to the selfie. The group filed suit this week in San Francisco federal court. And joining me to talk about it and how the legal status of animals has been changing are Jordan Weissman. He's senior business and economics correspondent at Slate. Welcome to Forum, Jordan Weissman.
Thanks for having me.
And we're also joined by David Grimm. He's deputy news editor for Science Magazine and author of Citizen Canine, Our Evolving Relationship with Cats and Dogs. Welcome, David Grimm.
Thank you.
Jordan Weissman, I want to start with you, if I could, and just give us a little recap of how we got here, how we got to the suit this week.
It's sort of a painful story. So it starts with this photographer named David Slater. I believe he's British. And he went off on a trip to Indonesia in 2011. He was specifically looking to take pictures of the crested black macaque. It's an impressive-looking monkey with very distinctive big eyes. And during this trip, basically, a ape hijacked his camera, took it, and just started taking selfies, just started pressing the button one time after another. And one of the photos came out sort of amazingly. I mean, it's just a picture of this monkey grinning at the camera. And let's be honest, the monkey looks stoned. I mean, that's why everyone loves this photo. The monkey looks really, really stoned and is taking selfies. So it was this fantastic picture. But then, you know, he thought, I hit a gold mine here, because for a nature photographer, it's sort of one big photo is basically going to be your meal ticket. You need something really distinctive, and, you know, you'll make money selling that photo over and over again through the year. Then later, the Wikimedia Foundation, overseas Wikipedia, decided to post that it wanted to have the photo posted on their website or on Wikipedia. And Slater said, no, I have the copyright to that. And Wikipedia said, no, you didn't take the photo. The monkey took the photo. And as a result, you don't have the copyright, because in the U.S., and actually, you might remember, some people might remember this from, there was a discussion when Ellen took her Oscar selfie and someone else actually pressed the button. In the U.S., it's whoever hits the button on the camera who gets the copyright. And since Slater himself didn't hit the button, he didn't frame the picture or anything, it was the monkey doing everything with his camera, he didn't, or according to Wikipedia, didn't have a copyright on it. And so this was a bit of a controversy until the U.S. government, the U.S. Copyright Office, actually issued an opinion where they clarified what was acceptable work for to be copyrighted.
Right.
And they said specifically, we will not register works produced by nature, animals, or plants. And an example that they gave was a photograph taken by a monkey, as well as a mural painted by an elephant. You also can't copyright, if your toast gets burnt with like a picture of Jesus in it, you can't copyright that either. You didn't make the burnt Jesus toast. But really importantly, it would not copyright anything created by an animal.
Right.
And that's where we thought we were. But then PETA, we all know and love, love might be a strong word, but we all know, went and filed a lawsuit on behalf of this ape that took the picture, And they're suing the photographer who has continued to sell copies of this photo, even though he technically doesn't have the copyright on it. And they are suing him for copyright infringement, saying that the copyright should actually belong to the ape,
right?
And despite what the Copyright Office says.
Right. So the Copyright Office says that, you know, it's not copyrightable if an animal took the photo. So how on earth can PETA claim that the monkey has the rights to it?
Well, technically, the Copyright Office isn't the last word on this. I mean, you know, the traditionally, they have not granted copyrights to a picture painted by elephants, for instance, or in now more modern times, monkey selfies. But that's their interpretation. In the end, the law is going to be set by the courts or Congress, one or the other, or the courts interpreting Congress. And so they're saying that essentially the copyright law is ambiguous enough that it could encompass animal authors, because it doesn't specify what sort of entity an author has to be. It doesn't have to be a human being. It could be a monkey with an itchy trigger finger.
I see. So the office is one thing and the law language is another, essentially.
Well, so that's PETA's argument. And so, you know, I've seen a few people and a few professors and, you know, opine in the press that this is a cutting edge legal question, and, you know, it'll be interesting to see how this is resolved. My personal impulse here, having talked to some copyright professors and experts in the past, is that this is a bit of a stunt by PETA. However, it is in keeping more seriously with this animal personhood movement that has also sort of been making some kind of moves in the court system recently, which is sort of aimed at gaining the same rights for animals that are typically guaranteed to people.
Yeah, David Grimm, could you put this lawsuit sort of in the context of other attempts to argue for animal personhood? First, what is that?
So, you know, that's a definition. This idea of personhood is not really agreed upon by everybody what it means. But for all intents and purposes, it means giving an animal a lot of the same rights that people would have. Maybe not the right to drive or the right to vote, but basically viewing animals, and all animals right now, or at least all domestic animals, are considered property in the U.S., which means they're no different from a toaster, even your cat or a dog. For all legal purposes, is a toaster in the eyes of the law. And what personhood would do is it would basically say an animal is not just an inanimate piece of property. It actually deserves some rights and, in some cases, deserves human-like rights. And I think what's interesting about this case is it's sort of one of a number of cases we've seen in the last few years that have where animal rights group has tried to use the court system to grant animals rights. So here we're seeing, you know, an attempt to grant a monkey a copyright right. And some people may be aware of cases that have been winding their way through the New York courts the last few years, an attempt to get by the Non-Human Rights Project, which is another animal rights group, to get four chimpanzees there granted the legal right of habeas corpus. And this would be the right to basically basically sue for the right to be free. These chimpanzees are being held in scientific labs or on private property. And so this group wants to give these chimps the ability to basically, by proxy, argue in court that they should be let free. And then PETA itself, a few years ago, actually tried to get orcas claimed as people under the 13th Amendment, or maybe slaves under the 13th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution, in an attempt to free them. I think what's significant about all these cases is these groups aren't going into courts and saying, we think animals should be turned into legal people. They're sort of taking this backdoor route and saying, well, just give them this one right. But what's interesting about these rights that are being sought is if they give them this one right, it's sort of a human right because, you know, the Copyright Office has said only people can hold a copyright. So if you all of a sudden you say an animal can hold that right too, does that mean an animal is a person? And, you know, the U.S. government says only people can sue for habeas corpus. So if you let a chimpanzee sue for habeas corpus, does that make a chimpanzee a person? So I think what we're seeing a lot of these cases is sort of a backdoor attempt to try to get animals some sort of semblance of legal personhood.
We're talking about a new twist in the debate over who owns the copyright for a famous monkey selfie. The camera owner? No one? Or according to PETA this week, the monkey? Joining me are Jordan Weissman, senior business and economics correspondent for Slate, and David Grimm, deputy news editor for Science Magazine. This is a half-hour segment, so weigh in now with your take if you'd like. Give us a call at 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. Or email us at forum@kqed.org. Post comments on Facebook or on our website, kqed.org/forum, or you can tweet us at kqedforum. So then, Jordan Weissman, back to the case. How can PETA file the suit on behalf of the monkey? I mean, the monkey didn't engage them.
No,
right?
I mean, I'm going to admit right here on this particular aspect of the civil justice system, I'm not a kind of authoritative expert, but there are a lot of situations in animal protection law, I know, for instance, where, for instance, in the Endangered Species Act, you are allowed to sue on an animal's behalf, essentially. I do think standing might be an interesting question here, but suffice to say, there are cases in American law where if a animal is somehow being harmed, it is possible for a person to come along as their essentially next of, like, their associate or their friend.
So then let's say that they get the damages. I mean, how would that benefit the monkey? How would it be administered?
Yeah, so what they're asking for is, again, they're suing the photographer himself for copyright infringement, and they want the money and the damages essentially to go and pay for the, you know, for the sanctuary where these animals live. They're partnering, it seems, with a they're partnering with a researcher who studies these animals. So it's for the care and feeding of Naruto the ape, or Naruto the crested black macaque. You know, that's sort of the goal here. And as the money would come in, I guess it would be administered by PETA and, you know, the people and these researchers to continue caring for them. That supposedly is the goal.
Hmm. A listener writes, in commercial photography, there's a term second photographer. This means while on a shoot, a photographer may have one or more second photographers help get the shot. Generally, all photo shots belong to the first photographer. Second photographers typically do not have access to those photos for their portfolios as they belong to the main photographer, as it's their shoot. At best, the macaque was Slater's second photographer. If PETA was smart, they would support Slater and urge him to donate some profits from that photo to an animal fund. That would help more than any animal having intellectual property rights. PETA is penny wise and pound foolish. Could Slater say he's acting on the monkey's behalf, David Grimm?
I think he potentially could. I think that's, you know, getting back to the listener's comment about what PETA's after here. I don't think PETA's end goal is really, and I can't really speak for PETA, but I don't think their ultimate end goal here is to get money for this macaque. Otherwise, perhaps they would have pursued that strategy. I think their end goal here is A, to drum up publicity, which PETA is great at, but also, you know, again, to really raise this question of animal rights in the courts. I mean, I think that would be a far more substantial victory for them to get a U.S. court to say, yes, a monkey can hold a copyright. I mean, it would be transformative, you know, in the field of animal rights and animal law, rather than just getting a few thousand dollars for a macaque. So I don't really think money is the object here for PETA.
I see. Let's go to Barbara in Hayward. Hi, Barbara.
Yes, hello. I have one brief comment, which is the camera was stolen. Therefore, the owner of the camera for whom it was stolen is the one who owns the copyright. And I'll get off the air.
All right. Well, thanks for weighing in. Let's go to Jeff Kerr in Washington.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm general counsel to PETA, and I'm one of the co-counsel who actually filed the lawsuit that you're talking about, and I appreciate you covering the case. I wanted to emphasize that what the lawsuit is about is protecting the rights of Naruto, that's the name of the macaque who took the photograph, and to use the proceeds, as you were discussing, for the benefit of him and his population. They are critically endangered. There are only about 4,000 to 6,000 of them left. They've diminished in number by 90% over the last 25 years, and they're being killed for bushmeat and because they're simply foraging for food. And there's no question from the photographer's own statements that Naruto purposely and independently made these photographs, and as a result, under the copyright law, he should be entitled to ownership and the benefits of them.
Well, Jeff, let me ask you, Sean writes, and we've had some other comments like this, this is such an inane fight that, of course, it's PETA behind it. PETA is behind so many ridiculous stunts that one wonders if they're actively trying to secretly discredit the animal rights cause. What's your response to that concern that this would be viewed as frivolous, as a stunt, and actually discredits substantive efforts?
Well, it's not my response. It's the response of a number of legal commentators who your guests cited earlier in the show, which is this is a cutting-edge legal theory. It's a cutting-edge legal argument. Animal rights has been developing over the last 30 years, and the law is developing and evolving in a way that people know is right. Animals are feeling, sentient beings, and they should have appropriate rights recognized just as we do.
Well, Jeff Kerr, I thank you for calling in. I'd like to go to David in San Francisco. Hi, David. Go ahead.
Hi. Good morning, everyone. Why are we spending so much energy, time, and money on something so silly? I mean, really. And don't misinterpret. I'm all for protecting animals, trees, and nature from abuse and misuse. But when it comes to talking about giving rights to an animal for taking a picture, this is not a human action. It is not anything that's recognizable. I mean, the next thing you're going to say is a mudslide and the water flowing the dirt down the hill infringing on somebody's property is a human action.
Well,
this is ridiculous.
Well, David, thanks for sharing your perspective. Though this specific case might be ridiculous in David's view, it is interesting that there have been these cases that have started to change the legal status of animals, David Grimm. I mean, Germany, I understand, amended its constitution to grant animals certain rights. I know in New York, pets, and I think we may have actually talked about this in the past, are allowed to be beneficiaries of trusts. I understand that a region of Spain granted personhood to great apes. So how is this legal status of animals evolving? Like, what do they occupy?
Yeah, it's interesting. We've seen, especially in the last few years, movements, in other countries to grant. I think Canada is even considering, or maybe a province of Canada was even considering, reclassifying animals or domestic animals as sentient property or something like that, sort of an elevation. But, again, for all intents and purposes, all domestic animals are still property. But what we've seen in, especially with dogs and cats, we've seen things like, pets can inherit money, which technically, your toaster can't inherit money. And we've seen felony anti-cruelty laws now in all 50 states in the U.S., which impose fines sometimes of up to more than $100,000 and 10 years in prison if you abuse animals. And some people will say, well, that's basically granting animals the right to be free from abuse. And, as I write in my book, there's actually been a few cases where dogs have been given lawyers in the U.S. So, and we're not giving lawyers to toasters. So, even though, animals are technically property, we've seen this evolution. And I think that's why cases like this are not being laughed out of the courtroom like they used to be. They're being considered. Now, they're still losing. All the chimp personhood cases in New York have lost. But the most recent chimp case, actually, the judge, I think, issued about a 50-page opinion where she sort of really sympathized with a lot of the arguments that the animal rights group was making about, animals deserving some rights and personhood and things like that, and which I think would have been unheard of even a decade ago for a judge to entertain a lawsuit like that. So I think we definitely are seeing some movement on this issue.
Beth asks, does a 2-year-old who knows how to use an iPhone to make selfies have a right to the selfies? The law says the person who owns the camera has the rights to whatever photos are on the camera. Is that correct?
So it's a little bit complicated, but essentially, yes, the person who owns the camera has the rights to the photo on the camera, right? Actually sitting on the camera itself. However, this is how it was explained to me previously. However, the rights to reproduce the image and such belong, to sell the image, essentially, belongs to the 2-year-old, or I guess their parent in that case. So it's a little bit complicated in that respect. But the copy, for all intents and purposes, the copyright of the image that would be reproduced and sold goes to the person who took the picture. That's just how American copyright law works. I will say one of the slightly odd things about this particular case as a vehicle for animal rights is that it is dealing with copyright law, and the purpose of copyright law is to incentivize artwork, right? It's to incentivize more music, more paintings, more books, etc. you literally can't incentivize a monkey to take more pictures. Like, the monkey did not know it was taking pictures. they had no idea that it was what it was actually doing other than hitting a button and making a sound. And so it is kind of an awkward fit, you know, trying to say, oh, copyright law should apply to an animal that literally cannot be encouraged to create more art with the abstract notion that it will be paid in the future for the rights of reproduction.
So then what do you think the judge will do in this case?
I mean, let's put it this way. If I were an investor, I would short this case. I would not bet on it as a win, but it'll be interesting to see what happens with it. I mean, the judge might weigh in a little bit more, humor it, but I have great difficulty imagining them prevailing in court. But who knows? You know, there are stranger things that have happened, especially in trial court levels before it gets up to appeals.
Jordan Weissman with Slate. Jordan Weissman, how is PETA able to do this in California if, you know, this is a British photographer, the event was in Indonesia?
That's interesting. You know what? I did not look specifically at the venue for the lawsuit, why they picked that spot. I know because PETA also is based in Virginia. I'm not quite sure about the jurisdiction. Sorry about that.
It's a U.S. district court, so I don't know this well, but I believe that gives it sort of, you know, maybe broader jurisdiction than just sort of a local court would have.
And I understand joining the PETA suit is a primatologist from Germany who studies macaques as well. Do you know anything about that, Jordan Weissman?
I think she knows Naruto, the monkey, and has studied Naruto and is sort of would be one of the ones helping to make sure the money went to take care of that population of macaques. Also, I just took another look at the lawsuit, and the reason it's in California apparently is that a company associated with the photographer that has been selling the book is based in California.
And this photographer, David Slater, he has a copyright. He was granted one in Britain, right? But we're not required to honor that.
It's U.S. and British copyright.
Yeah,
there may be some reciprocity there of some kind, but I don't think we would have to. I don't think our copyright laws completely conform to theirs.
David Grimm, we've touched on this, but could you just, you know, just sort of what is the end game around the personhood fight? I mean, what are the problems that could arise if animals were given this,
Yeah, well, you know, it's a really interesting debate because the people that are pro-personhood tend to frame it as, well, of course, you know, we want to protect animals, and the best way to protect them is to give them the right to sort of, you know, fight for their own welfare, to fight for their own protection. But there's a lot of strong voices on the other side, people like, you know, scientists worried that, you know, if Naruto, gets something like personhood, then what's to stop lab rats from getting personhood, and what's that going to do to biomedical research? And farmers worried about, you know, the slippery slope for livestock, and what happens if that cow is now a person or that chicken is now a person. And even veterinarians, you know, have really sort of been on edge about some of this stuff because they worry about cats and dogs suing them for malpractice. So, I mean, a lot of this stuff sounds kind of ridiculous, but these are actually valid arguments that the other side has raised to say, you know, personhood isn't something to be taken lightly. This could be very transformative for our society and not necessarily in a good way.
Well, Kathleen writes, some of the comments about the photo really show how far we have to go as humans to change our thinking about the other beings who share our common home. It's very sad that many can only see other animals as property, such as a toaster. Very sad. Wasn't so long ago that women were only seen as property, such as a toaster. And Ron emails, animal personhood might not make sense, but it's not as dangerous as corporate personhood. Well, David Grimm, deputy news editor of Science Magazine and author of Citizen Canine, Our Evolving Relationship with Cats and Dogs, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And thank you, Jordan Weissman, senior business and economics correspondent for Slate.
Thanks for having me.
Up next, we'll explore what's behind the words we use to describe our food with Stanford linguist Dan Jurafsky. I'm Mina Kim. Stay with us.